Before we jump into today's episode with CJ, I wanted to share something with you that's coming up in the life of our community. Look, we know that serving a church is both rewarding, but also incredibly challenging at times. We can face lighting issues, design questions, communication breakdowns, and more. Most of us are in tons of social media groups. We want to ask questions, get advice, but sometimes we just don't hear back. Listen, I've personally experienced the frustration of not having the online support I wish I had. That's why I'm so excited today to announce the start of a new community called Church Circle. It's an online community where pastors, church staff, and church creatives can come together and hopefully inspire, encourage, and make the church better. Imagine having a group of peers who get what you're going through and can offer the support that you need. Or maybe you just need some advice on a recent graphic you made for your church. Church Circle is for you. You can be part of 27 Facebook groups, or you can be part of one church circle. We launch on April 8th, and I can't wait for you to experience what an online community should be like. Well, welcome back to the Church Circle podcast. This is the fourth episode of the podcast, and this is the podcast that celebrates church creatives. Now, I went through my contact list to find someone who had a really good voice on this specific topic, and one name kept popping out, and that is CJ Alvarado. CJ and I have known each other for a very long time now. It feels this is a pre-COVID relationship, so we weathered the storm there. And really, CJ is one of the first people that I had met kind of outside of my own church sphere when I met my wife and went to California, and that's where I met CJ. So CJ is a great guy. He's got a lot of insight to bring. And he's also one of those hidden gems of the church world as well, where you may have seen some of his stuff and some of the stuff that he does and the impact that he has, but quite often he's working behind the scenes. So I thought it'd be a great guy to get on the podcast to chat about this specific topic. And we'll get into that in a second. But firstly, CJ, how are you? And maybe just share a little bit about yourself.
Ruben, I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you, obviously. It's been a little while, but to be here. And just on this show with you, I'm doing great. And just excited to be here.
So yeah, maybe just dive into a little bit about kind of who you are and how you got kind of to where you are. Because I know there's some music industry in your history. There's a lot of marketing as well.
Oh, so maybe, man. You're going way back. In.
Yeah, well, we have to.
I originally thought, I thought I wanted to be a music producer. So at 19, I started my first company. What was a music studio? I put that in air quotes because it was pretty much me making beats on a computer in the Bay Area in San Francisco, California. So I started doing that, making music locally, and realized quickly I knew nothing about running a business. I knew nothing about getting clients and managing cash flow. And so that business failed. Right. I'd love to just tell you, Ruben, it was a massive whopping success at such a young age, but it was not. It was a colossal failure, but it taught me so much. And so I started, you know, getting into the industry more, and now with fresh eyes, started really kind of seeing peers and other decision makers and people in a different light, started to kind of look at how they were doing different things. And so started another company at around 23 or 24 or so. And at about that time, I'm about to age myself, but at about the time, YouTube was really like kicking up. And I know. And we thought, man, you know, what would be really cool is just like connecting bands and their content, music and music videos and things like that, with their fans directly. At that time, it was like MTV was the only way you could watch music videos. And it was like kids would rush home after school and watch Yo MTV Raps or some other, you know, thing. And we'd watch our Nirvana videos and all that stuff. So this was like such a novel idea back then. And so we started this company, and I had a cousin of mine who focused on video, and I ran the music side, another person who did all the web development stuff. Well, anyway, it was kind of the right idea at the right time. And I realized I was actually decent at doing, you know, what is now like the marketing for bands and how we were connecting them to their audiences, and just kind of had a natural knack for it. Well, that company did really well, and we ended up being part of like an acquisition, but it's called an acqui-hire, where they basically just buy the staff out. And I went to go work for the company that bought us. And that was the largest music technology and film technology software company in the world. They were called DigiDesign at the time. Now they're known as Avid. And so I worked in marketing there and worked with Pro Tools, an audio editing software there, and bringing that to market and growing their LE line, which was like their prosumer line. At that time, Pro Tools was just really expensive and hard to get into, but in every studio. And we were focusing on the software that the average Joe could make music in their home. So it was great. It was really a big passion point, which then led me to doing their live sound products, where I was leading or helping with marketing there and leading that charge. And so most of my time had been spent, you know, working on the music technology side. I've been in marketing pretty much my whole life. I met a guy, a worship leader, and he would go to all our trade shows. And he was like, you should come help us in the church world. And I never worked in the church or anything like that. But he was kind of the first guy to kind of go like, we could maybe use your help or your help in some ways. But my whole career, for the most part, had been in the marketplace up until that point. And like I said, I've worked in marketing my whole career, pretty much.
It's really cool because a lot of people that we talk to on this podcast and that we have spoken to, one of their innovators, so they see a gap and they go for it. And sometimes they get it wrong and sometimes they get it right. I don't think innovation always is a success. But the other thing as well is there's this crossover between what we would call the secular world, right? And the church world. And quite often the experience that we get from the secular world actually really applies to how we can structure and how we can organize and how we can operate in the church world. So it's super interesting. A lot of these people that we're speaking to at the moment, you know, they all started in some kind of, you know, just job that you would never consider has any crossover. And now here we are. And this is the thing, like the conversation we're having today has nothing really to do with the music industry, apart from that was your introduction into it. And now the conversation is about impacting leaders and impacting churches. And I can't wait to deep dive into that. But it's really cool. And I think for anyone listening, you know, even if you're at a point right now where you're like, maybe you're not in the church world, so to speak, but you're looking at, you know, how you can impact the church. Well, maybe the role that you're in right now can have a big impact in the future as well. So hopefully that's encouragement, and I really appreciate you sharing that, CJ. But in your opinion right now, you've come with all of these expertise, and you've, like we've touched on it a little bit, we kind of got into, you know, in the kind of church world, and you're not just in the church world. It's also worth saying that there's loads of other stuff you do outside of that, but you have a hand in the church world. What's like the biggest issue or the biggest problem that church communications are facing, that church leaders are facing right now, particularly after COVID? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the themes that I see, and I feel like I have the privilege of working with marketplace or just businesses. We've worked with Masterclass, History Channel, many on that scale and that level, but also, you know, more modest sized businesses. And then also churches that are, you know, 5,000, 10,000 or more. It doesn't really matter, and really smaller churches too. And all of those cases, often what I find is the biggest offender is the thinking around communication. We tend to think that communication or good communication is about getting information out, but it's really about getting through, you know? And so as long as you see communications or the creative arts as like, we have to promote, or we have to just get this thing out to the world, we tend to contribute to the noise. And what I find is that great marketing, it either creates demand or it creates more noise. And unfortunately, we live in a really noisy time. There's more information available to the average person than any other time in history, right? So if we don't really philosophically grapple with what is it that we're really trying to do here in, you know, in these creative and communication departments, we find very little impact on the other end. And so what happens usually is people go, the result's not there. Turn it up. Let's get louder. Let's amplify. right? Which only then just triggers within us as consumers or guests, our ability to ignore things and just shut it off. And we are absolute professionals at ignoring things today. You know this, right? We all do it. And so I think that's the big issue that I see generally speaking. And then as it relates to, you know, creatives maybe in the church, I always lean on this quote, like with young creatives that I mentor, I give them this quote by George Lewis. He was like a very world renowned art director. He's considered, you know, the guy behind some of the most iconic ads for some of the largest brands. He's an older gentleman now. The TV show Mad Men was said to have been about him. And he says, you know, if you're going to do great creative work, 1% of your time should be based on inspiration, 9% perspiration, and 90% justification, right? So that first percent is just being inspired and having ideas. The 9% is the perspiration, the work itself. And then 90% is justifying, trying to get the approval, trying to get to yes, right? Most creatives spend very little time investing in that last part. And what we argue about or what we talk most about in the church or in creative circles is the approval process, the creative differences, the tension in that whole process. And yet we invest very little in that. So I think that's the second big issue that I tend to see.
Yeah. So we talked about this with Brady Shearer earlier in the podcast, and we talk about the ministry of communication. So it's not just a notice board, right? Like social media is not a notice board, but a ministry. And I think everyone's kind of getting to the point where they're on board with that now, particularly as church creatives.
Sure.
But not, it's not all the time that it's just church creatives we're dealing with, right? Like quite often a lot of church creatives, and people are probably listening to this right now, agreeing and amening, is that they don't get given the free rein that maybe they need or they would like to just do what they think is right. So this is where this 90% justification comes in, is you've got a lot of people that are having to go to their leaders, to their line managers, to their pastors, and they've got to try and justify the reasons why. They've got to try and convince. And you use the frame or the term win the room.
Yeah.
So maybe we can kind of dive into that a little bit. What does win the room mean? And you know, how can us as church creatives start to kind of focus less on maybe output and maybe more on actually justifying the work we're already creating?
Yeah. So most of our careers, we're going to be doing one of three things, no matter our age or our stage in our life and our career. We're going to be trying to get in the room, win the room, and stay in the room. These may sound like business or very like salesy types terms, but just hang with me. They kind of were birthed out of the marketplace and business world, but they're just as relevant to us as creatives in the church world. The room represents any space or place where decision makers gather and they look over the strategies. They look over a proposal. They look over your marketing brief. They look over your creative series designs, and they have to make decisions. They have to allocate resources. They have to decide who gets what resource, who gets what promotion. All of that happens in what I'm calling the room. Right. And it's not always a boardroom or a meeting room. Sometimes it's an elevator ride. Sometimes it's a golf, you know, a game of golf. Sometimes it's a phone call or a Zoom call. That's why I call it the spaces and places, right? They can be spaces as well. And so we're constantly, unless you're creating art, right? And there is a distinction. If you're creating art, you're creating it kind of for yourself in whatever way you want. The ultimate audience is you, and you get to decide. And so we assume that your living has somehow been figured out. If you're doing design or you're doing communication, well, now we have to work with various groups of stakeholders. We may have to work with leadership, an audience, some kind of constituency, a customer base, right? Those customer base may have certain needs, certain pain points. So you have to figure out what side are you on. 99.9% of church creatives are doing design and communication. And that's where attention is. They haven't made that shift in their mind that we have to expect that we have to work with other decision makers. If you work at Pixar and you're doing an animation, your work's going to go through a ton of layers of approvals and revisions and reviews, right? Legal might look at what you put out there. Finance might look like everybody's going to check some things because they kind of have to. It's just the nature of that beast. And so, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time bringing our work to other people. And so my hope and goal with creatives is to try to give them some skills that help them get in that room and win it. Because if they do that, that's when they'll find more influence, more autonomy, more trust comes to them as leaders and to their teams.
That's great. So how do you implement that? Like what I've got down here is like, how does a creative gain the trust of a leader? Because a lot of the time, you know, we can have that. It's not like it's all the time the things that we're creating are being rejected, because, you know, in that scenario, you probably won't be in that job for much longer.
Right.
You know, either you'll quit or you'll get fired because it's just not working. But there's a percentage of the time where what you bring to the table is automatically approved, it's accepted. But then it's about how do we increase that and gain the trust, and how do the leaders and passers start to loosen the reins slightly so that they can kind of trust you to just go and do it. How do you do that as a creative, as someone in a communications team? How do you go to your line manager, your pastor, and how do you start to build a relationship with them that gives them the trust to understand that you've got what it takes to do this well?
Yeah, great question. So assuming we're making a couple assumptions here. One, that, you know, you're a hard worker, and two, you've got some skill, right? Like you said, if you just, you're in the wrong seat and maybe don't have skill, like some of this probably will have diminished returns. But making those two assumptions, you're willing to work hard and you got some skill, we have to look at four key things generally. There's probably more, but four major things. And I think if creatives get a handle of this by next Monday, right, they'll start to see a shift in how people react and interact with them. The first thing is just how we see problems. And so when we look at problems, there's no shortage of problems. A creative might come in and have a slew of requests from all their ministries in their church, right? And I'll just talk specifically to the church audience. In addition to all the things they need to do for the weekend, in addition to the last minute audibles that the pastor throws in on a Thursday, right, that they have to tend to, there's no shortage of problems. But in real impactful creatives learn that, hey, over time, there's always going to be fires. There's always going to be challenges and problems that are there. I had a great conversation with a friend, Scott Harrison. He runs Charity Water, and he shared this quote with me that said, don't get discouraged in doing work that has no end. For us in the creative world, like especially in the church, the work has no end. The challenges and the problems, there's no end. So we have to find a different way to work through them. And what I tell folks is, let's solve the right problems, right? Let's focus on the problems that are keeping our leaders up at night. And I make a point personally, and I'll ask my own managers that I'm working with, do you know the problems that are keeping your leader up at night? If you don't, that's the first thing you have to go do. And you really have to think about it and really wrestle with, why is it keeping them up at night? So there's not a CEO or a senior pastor that I work with that I don't know what is keeping them up at night. Usually they're looking to close the back door. They're looking to try to get people connected or get people into their worship service. What is the problem they're trying to solve? Right. So that's the first thing. The second thing is really understanding perceptions, right? Perceptions are just the things we think and feel when we think about some things. And the big thing here for creatives is that your leaders, they treat you the way they think about you, not the way you think about you. Right. And so the creative team comes in and goes, we work so hard. We do all of these revisions. We do so much with so little, you know, information. And what we get is this experience, whatever this is, right? It's usually not a great one in their mind. And what I like to say is, okay, you can continue on thinking every leader you work with is toxic and every culture is bad and that this church doesn't care. And your career will be a series of endless beginnings. You'll always be there and kind of leave starting and starting and starting again. Or you can take a step back and kind of look at, what are the perceptions that are here? Perceptions are made up of two things. They're made up of your self-presentation, how well you demonstrate you understand the problems the church is trying to solve, how well you carry yourself. Can you control your own emotions? Can you kind of communicate? How do you dress? In some churches, the dress thing is really casual. So that's kind of like, you know, it varies. And then the most important piece about the perception is like the baggage of the beholder. There's baggage that a pastor will have about working with creatives that has nothing to do with you personally. Mm-hmm. It may have something to do with the creative director or senior designer or the videographer that was in a position before you were even there. And their working experience was such that now it's created this perception around you or your whole team. I don't care how good your pitch is or how good your design is. If you walk into a room and those perceptions are shared by multiple senior leaders, your ideas will have so much more friction to fight against. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Oops. So I learned this lesson the hard way. I was at DigiDesign making a big marketing campaign, and I had to kind of get my ideas out to the CEO and the CFO and team. And so we were pitching kind of our rough idea, and Ruben, like, it just bombed. Like the CFO is just there, arms crossed, just his face just seemed angry the whole time. I just kept reading into everyone's faces. Most creatives I know are pretty empathetic people. So they're probably picking up on every little gesture that's happening in the room. and then that's affecting them. And they're trying to present and persuade and do their thing, right? And it just didn't go off well. And I thought, okay, let me go back to my team and polish up this presentation. So like we polished up the presentation, came back with an even more beautiful slide deck, and we presented, and it was the same. The short of it is, I didn't realize that the CFO had this perception about all of marketing. It is fluff and it never contributes to the bottom line. Well, no matter what I brought to that guy, if I didn't address the perception, he would never have enough confidence that I was the right person for the job.
Yeah.
And so on the third pitch, I go in and the first thing I did was say, hey, listen, I know that you guys may look at our team and you may wonder, you know, does any of this matter? You may be wondering, do we even understand the business objectives here or the ministry outcomes here? And I said, so I want you guys to know everything you're going to see today, we've thought through the lens of how does this add impact to the bottom line? And all of a sudden his arms like stopped being crossed and he like leaned in. I'd like to tell you that I walked out of there. We were hugging and broing out. We weren't, but it was a small step towards us building a very strong relationship. And we did have, you know, a very strong relationship of trust, a very open honesty, and one that he began to, you know, advocate for my team. And so that had nothing to do with design, Ruben. It had nothing to do with our team's ability to do the work. It had everything to do with that justification piece, you know?
Yeah.
So those are the first two, and the last two, I'll just say real quick, cause I'm talking too much, is really about how we communicate as creatives, the pitching part. And then lastly, the people that we align ourselves with. So problems, what problems are we solving? Two, perceptions. Are we landing the right perceptions? Three, are we delivering the right pitch? Are we talking properly? And then four, are we aligning with the right people? If a creative gets those four things sorted out, like things really start to change for them.
Yeah. I mean, you're not talking too much because everything you're saying is absolute gold. So I know there's gonna be people listening to this right now, scribbling down all these notes. So we've got a few more minutes. So don't worry about talking too much. But I think one of the pitfalls that happens with creatives is quite often they say, I'll start caring when you start caring. Mm. And if they don't get the like with the pastor, they're like, oh, they don't really care what I produce anyway. They always shut down the idea. What tends to happen is you become very numb to the work that you produce. And then it's a downward spiral from there because there's no passion. There's no, like you said, empathy. There's nothing there that actually has an emotional connection because you've disconnected yourself in order to preserve yourself. But what you're saying is actually, why don't we go on the attack, on the offensive, and be like, okay, what is it that the pastor, what do I need to care about for the pastor to care about me or the pastor to care about what I produce? I think that's super interesting because I think that's quite often as creatives, we're in a defensive position. Everything's about protecting our inner peace, protecting, you know, our creativity. You know, at the end of the day, we do have skills and there's not skills that people can take away from us. So we're trying to protect those things, and we're less prone to being offended if we're on the defensive. But if you can go in with the kind of not attack mindset, but the offensive mindset, where it's like, let me find out what the problem is. Let me find out how to make this pastor understand that I care about the outcomes as well.
Yes.
Then I think we're all in a better place. So great thoughts. And I want to keep this thing moving, but at the same time, I want to get these points across, because these are really good points. How do you stop people, you know, how do you stop leaders getting lost? So like there must be a point where you go overboard with this stuff, and there must be a point, like there's got to be a balance, right? So how do you prevent losing the room? Like if I go in a tuxedo and I go in, you know, like I'm a 1920s salesman some sort of crate standing on it with like shouting, I've gone too far, right?
Yes.
So how do you keep the authenticity as a creative, as someone that is known in the church and trusted in the church to a certain extent? How do you continue to extend that without kind of changing yourself and losing that trust?
Yeah, we're not trying to do sales here. We're not trying to be something we're not. We're not trying to be disingenuous. We're not trying to be, you know, someone else or something else. So like I said, your self-presentation has to be appropriate to the type of organizational culture you're in, right? So if it's cool to wear shorts and flip-flops, you don't need to all of a sudden come in a three-piece suit, right? I never would advocate for that. And I've had to do that in the past, and I hated the icky feeling of it. All I'm saying here is, you know, be yourself, but have a mind that understands this goes beyond my own identity and work. If you're truly trying to have an impact as a creative, you know, we have to think outside of ourselves. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that happen for us. It's a trap. It's where our identity and our work, they kind of get intertwined together. And most folks conceptually can understand the idea that I should be, my identity and my work should be separate. But when push comes to shove, when they put the work out there, you can see that maybe they're still working on that. And I always tell folks, like, try to be a scientist, right? Here's the work we're trying to do and the goal that we're trying to meet. Put that out there outside of your identity. You can be brilliant even if the idea didn't work, even if the idea sucks, even if the idea didn't land well. You can still be a smart, very talented, brilliant creative. And that's the reality if you're going to stay in this game long term. If your identity and your work are going to be so intertwined, when things are up, you're going to feel great. And then when ideas don't hit, you're going to feel really down. And that's a roller coaster I'm trying to help creatives prevent, right? Because it shouldn't be so up and down. There's going to be some exhilarating moments and some down moments. We got to pay the rent. We got to do the pay the rent kind of work. That's not always so fun and exciting. Sure. But when we're dealing with like the identity stuff, I see some creatives get really low. They question themselves. They question ministry. They question a lot of things because their identity has been too attached to that work. This is something where it's like, we put the work out there. We use bold feedback. We try to make it great. We get back to it. And always keeping our eye on the guest, always keeping our eye on the impact so that God can work and that the creative team, you know, can make the improvements needed. Does that make sense?
That's great. And I think that only leads to the trust being earned and the trust being gained. And then from that, am I right in saying like the approval process gets a lot faster? Like you get to the point where the pastor leader is like, oh, no, I know they've got it. And you're gonna have those flops, but they're more recoverable because you've got that track record and that trail behind you.
Yeah, like think about it for a second. Think about the life of these decision makers. You've got your senior pastors, you've got these guys. They have a finite amount of attention, right? We all do as humans. You may put in 12 hours of work every day, but you only have about 4 or 5 hours of attention, really focused attention that you can give in a day before you have to step away, go for a walk, take a nap, do whatever you have to do to renew that. Well, decision makers have infinitely more people vying for their attention than we do as a creative, right? They've got finance and finance and other ministries and other folks, you know, needing their eyes on things, needing to pick their brains, needing approval. So those guys are so relentless usually about how they guard their attention. So when creatives walk into the room and they're like just rambling on and on, or they are not really sure about what it is they're presenting, what they're doing is they're signaling to the part of that decision maker's brain, I have to shut this off because they don't really know what they're asking for or what they really want to solve. So if you're a creative, it's where the pitching part comes in of this, is you really need to understand, what is it that I'm trying to say? What is it that I really want? I tell creatives to don't ever go into a meeting with a boss, a manager, without knowing three things. What are you trying to say? It's what, so what, now what? What are you trying to say? Or what is it that you need? I need approval on this sermon series look. Okay, so what? Well, we're doing this because this look we believe will achieve more impact in our community. It has this kind of vibe, or it's, you know, whatever it is. So what? Why is what you're presenting important? And then now what? What do you need from the decision maker? If you can package whatever it is you're pitching or talking to them about in such a clear way, those guys will find you as a breath of fresh air, because in all the leaders they have to talk to, no one really does that for decision makers. I tell creatives, there's a quote that says, the attention that someone gives you is the rarest and purest form of generosity. So if someone is giving you, especially a senior leader or a boss, is giving you their attention, do them the solid by having them not have to give you as much as is needed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Man, these are great thoughts. We could talk about this for hours, because we've even got this whole, we've talked about this before, like the crocodile brain, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've gone into that whole thing before, oh, yeah. Which we may have to do a part two at some point, because this is great stuff. But it's all to do with the instant decisions that leaders and stuff make. And, yeah. And you know, how do you get to the root of that very quickly? Like, which is kind of what we just touched on. But
yeah,
I mean, CJ, it's been 30 minutes of jam-packed information. And I'm glad that I didn't have to do much talking, partly because I'm still recovering from being sick, but also because the amount of wisdom you just gave compared to what I could offer in this time is second to none. So thank you so much. Maybe just if there's any kind of final thoughts to share, you know, this is a creative that's been deeply impacted by this. What's kind of like the final thing you would just tell them to just kind of get them moving to the next step?
Yeah, I think that invest in... You'll never go wrong if we invest in how we communicate our ideas or our creative. If you're leading creative teams, you know, the best thing you could do this year is learn how to package and communicate these ideas so that they can be digested faster and so that action can be taken. I like to ask, what are we trying to facilitate with our leaders? Not what are we trying to tell them? Right? What is it that we actually want them to go do? And so if I can invest in any skill that helps them digest this stuff faster and take action, man, your team's going to love you as a creative leader. So good luck with all of it.
Well, it's been a great conversation. If you guys are listening to this and you know someone who will be really impacted by this, why don't just send them the link? It'll be on Apple Music or Spotify or YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening. And give us a rating as well, a thumbs up, a like, maybe a comment or a review on Apple Music or Spotify, just to kind of let other people know the kind of quality of content we've got here. Again, not through my doing, but through the people that are on this show, bringing some really good wisdom. CJ, how could people connect with you personally? You know, whether it's, you know, a church wanting to know more about kind of the things you offer, or whether it's just a creative kind of got some questions, how can they get connected?
Yeah, if you want to know more about the ins and outs about the whole win the room, there's a book currently I'm working on, but you can follow me on my Substack. It's takenewground.substack.com. And I just kind of geek out on some of these concepts, share real stories from the trenches. And so you can follow that work. Otherwise, you know, you can just find me on social media, CJ Alvarado. And that should work on pretty much every platform.
Cool. I had no clue you were going to bring a book out. This is perfect timing.
Yeah, it's called Win the Room. I'm hoping to be done with it this year. This year, yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'm looking forward to when that comes out. I'll definitely be reading that. but thank you so much again for joining and sharing your thoughts. And hopefully this has been an impactful conversation for you, the listener. We'll be back again next week. We've got some exciting news next week about something we're launching, so stick around for that. We've got a guest called Austin. You guys may know him. He works at Canvas Church. You guys know them as the Black and Orange Church. Their branding is on point, so stick around for that. Thank you guys so much for listening, for watching, and we'll see you guys then.